Crouch. Bind. Set.
Joe presents the House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Welcome everybody to a bonus episode of House of Rugby, brought to you by Joe, together with our very good friends at Guinness. It's not just the men who are in action this weekend in the Six Nations. The women, of course, are taking centre stage as well. Some, I don't include myself in this, but some might say it's a two-horse race between France and England. Yeah, I thought I might get a boo or a hiss, but not in these parts. Some also might say that Ireland are very, very dangerous underdogs, and certainly an underdog that can bite. We're going to chat for about half an hour over what is to come in the Women's Six Nations this season. We could spend about 25 minutes just introducing our first guest, but I won't do that. I'll be short and sweet. She is an absolute legend of the game. She's won the World Cup, the Six Nations, World Player of the Year. She's Rugby Writers Player of the Year a couple of years ago as well. She's an MBE. She's the first woman inducted into World Rugby's Hall of Fame. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the wonderful Maggie the Machine Alfonsi. Come on in, Maggie. One of the game's greats. Come on, have a smooch in a seat. Welcome aboard. I'm a doubler. Maggie, take a seat there. Thank you very much indeed. We have two hometown girls as well. First up, she played in both the 15s and the 7s World Cups. She actually had a pin removed from her knee earlier today as well. Quite remarkable, I think you'll agree. Ladies and gentlemen, the wonderful Jenny Murphy. Come on in, Jenny. Walking freely like a true athlete. Come on in and grab a seat. How's it all been going upstairs? You've been behaving? Come on in. Thank you very much. Grab a seat there. And last but not least, 85 caps for Ireland. Three World Cups. She captained her country to their first Grand Slam. The Six Nations, the Triple Crown. It's the wonderful Fiona Coughlan. Come in, Fiona. Do you need a drink? Got my... How are you? Are you all right? Come and have a seat. Thank you very much indeed. If I can stick you on there. Would you like a drink?
I'll have half a glass of Guinness.
Half a glass of Guinness.
She was attacking me earlier for having a half a glass.
Would you like a half or a whole?
A half.
A half.
Water, please.
Spy is still the athlete. Ever the professional. You can help yourself, Maggie, if you'd like, Sparky. You're very welcome, indeed. We've got so much we can talk about in terms of rugby, but I'm going to throw it out there a little bit. There is absolutely no doubt that women's rugby has, and women's sport in general, has exploded across the board, particularly in the last 5-6 years or so. And yet it sort of seems that everyone's quite protective of it as well. I'd love to start by finding out, do the girls party as hard as the boys after a good win?
No.
True professionals?
Yeah, more?
More! That's
totally
what we want to know.
Totally get on it.
You've won the World Cup. I mean,
he's talking to me.
Oh, I'm talking to all three of you. But at the moment, everyone's very sort of protective of women's sport. I'd just like to dig under the bonnet a little bit and find out, after a good win, how hard do the girls go?
Do you know, when you spend, especially in the World Cup, you spend 6 weeks of just preparing, building up, winning your games, and then all of a sudden you obviously don't drink because it's about being the professional. And then when that final whistle blows, all you think about is getting on it.
Right.
Honestly, I'm not an alcoholic, but all I want to do is get on it. I mean, it's hard though. You know, when you've worked so hard, you just really want to let your hair down a little bit, to be fair, especially if you've won. So that's quite a nice feeling to think that it's all kind of paid off for good reason.
So you won the World Cup.
You can go hard even when you don't win as well.
Numbs the pain sometimes, doesn't it? Yes. It's an interesting point that as well. I mean, in terms of the camaraderie and the team spirit, often from watching women's sport, it appears that there's a sort of greater sense of unity within a female team. You often hear about egos in men's sport and people playing together, not necessarily because they like each other, but because they have a job to do. In women's sport, do you feel it's much more of a sort of...
Yeah, I'd say there is. You're always trying to do this team building. You have such a limited time together that you're trying to team build. And every year it's like, oh, what we do for team building this year. So actually 2014 World Cup, Goose, who was our coach, he was like, so team building this year. We went to the army camp the year before. He's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, go for a drink together. And he was like, really? And I was like, this was in the middle of a camp. And I was like, yeah, what harm? But he said, right, so we're sitting in a team meeting. And he says to the girls, right, we're not having a meeting tonight. All you to the bar. And no one moved because they were like, is this a test? If we move, we're going to lose our place. So, obviously it wasn't a crazy session because in the middle of a camp, but it was just, you just get to sit down, relax, know each other. So it was a good night.
Probably
it wasn't mad, but...
Blow some steam off a little bit. And I think it's underrated as an Irish culture. We do a session every now and then and we're quite good at it. So
the stereotype transfers from...
Yeah, like I think and you need to practice to get good at it. So yeah. We were getting a bit rusty, so we needed to...
Good. Yeah. So let's... If Murray can bring... I can have a half pint as well. Join the, Murray's coming with 3 half pints and a sparkling water for Maggie. So just in terms of the Six Nations... Actually, first of all, how is the knee? And are you on painkillers as we speak, or...?
It's like it looks slightly faster than the other. It's just bandaged up and stuff, so it's just a few stitches running down. It's all right. It's a bit numb-like.
You had it done at...?
11 a.m.
this morning.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Painkillers and drink.
Painkillers and drink. A very good concoction for all of us.
Professional.
Please do drink responsibly. Yeah. Please do drink responsibly, as our friends against us say. This was obviously an evil necessity, but what have they said now about the road to return?
So I basically did the damage last year in February, like 30 seconds into a club game. ACL, double meniscus, PCL, all the letters
proper
that
job.
Are important. Yeah. So meant to face this way and it faced that way.
Right.
I was kind of, didn't really know I'd be able to play again. Got really lucky with the surgeon and a doctor kind of jumped on board and was like, no, we're going to get you fixed. And been rehabbing like every day, sometimes twice a day. And there was just a little, whatever way I was rehabbing it, a muscle pushed one of the pins out. So it was kind of sticking out a little bit. So anytime you kind of hit off it, it wasn't the most pleasant.
Right. So you're saying it sort of was so painful.
Oh yeah, there's definitely like an upchuck feeling of like, whoa, like if right. you've whatever you've
you should
had.
Talk to Olga actually, who won the competition
nice.
Earlier. Yeah, she was comparing notes on vomit.
Yeah. So he's like, just whip it out, and that's what he did. So I was able to kind of watch the procedure as it was getting done. Which I would not recommend at all because it's right. disgusting. But I was like, no, this is curious. And then the minute he kind of like pried it open, I was like, I'm out. And
wow.
Yeah, so it's...
And what have they said about... Are you still on track to get back and...
Yeah, so in the next 2.5 weeks, I'll be going back to do like sled running. So it's you stack weights on and kind of pull, push that way. So getting the running mechanics back and then... Like, I'm never going to get the speed because I never had it, but I'll
or
hopefully get...
Step.
Yeah, or the sidestep. Thanks, Fiona Coughlin. Sound.
Good.
When a front row is giving you banter, mate, you're just
sorry,
like...
Can I put this in perspective? Oh. I was sevens training, and a prop should never be sevens training, but anyway...
She wasn't invited. She just found out we were training and rocked up in her full Irish kit, being like, by the way, I'm captain of the 15th season.
Stash.
So better.
Stash.
Yeah.
Anyway... We're doing a drill and you're supposed to sidestep the defender. Jenny sidesteps into me, absolutely wrecks her ankle, puts herself out of a whole tournament, so Jenny should never sidestep.
Very true. The Maori sidestep.
Silver lining, I got to finish my thesis and that's how I graduated from college. So if I didn't sidestep...
Highs and lows.
Yeah.
Highs and lows.
Yeah. I'll take the claim for that.
Yeah. Do you want to get it back about the tooth? We were talking about the tooth earlier as well.
Sure, if we're bringing up like old wounds. Yeah, so actually... interesting fact about both members of the girls on the
this
couch.
This is probably not a good thing.
This is not a good time
you
to
would,
talk about.
Like, if you were to look at them, right, who do you think has a fake tooth / dentures? Have a little smile there, guys. Both of them.
Pearly whites, both. Very nice set of teeth.
Both of them have fake teeth. Yeah.
Do they?
Fake teeth.
It's rugby. Rugby for
which
you.
One's, which one's
rugby?
Fake?
Mine was my first Saracens. I played Saracens. Rugby social.
Not even in the heat of battle.
It was in the clubhouse. My team got me, spiked my drink, got me absolutely... drunk and
can't say it. Arsehole, I think is the word you're looking for. Yeah,
and I fell over. I landed on my teeth and I knocked two of my teeth out. And all I remember is everyone saying, "Put it in milk, put it in milk." Milk doesn't actually save your teeth if you do knock it out. So I did arrive in the hospital the next day with my teeth in the milk, and they were like, "Yeah, we're not going to save it." So I've got a.
Did you turn it to the necklace or a sort of ornament or anything like that?
Like my earrings.
Sort of trophy. Yeah, exactly. Very nice. So there's your front tooth.
Mine is proper war story. It was on the pitch playing USA. I got an uppercut by the flanker in the scrum and it was over in England and I was kind of like, oh, it's a bit of crack at the back. It'll be fine. They'll just cement it in and went into the dentist the next day and he just pulled it out and I refused to do any media for the rest of with the tournament. But it comes out at the most inopportune times. I'm a maths teacher and one day I was teaching and I said Fibonacci and it flew across the room. And I was like, just find my tooth. So that was probably the most embarrassing one.
Fibonacci will do that too, won't it? Incredible scenes. So we can keep going down this line. We can talk a bit of rugby as well. Where would you, Maggie? You choose. Where would you like to go? Do you feel?
I don't really want to talk about teeth anymore because that's sort of like
okay. Yeah. But the sisters are doing it for themselves. So in terms of the Six Nations, is it fair to say it's between France and England, or is that cutting it too far?
I think it is quite fair. I do think the first game, England Ireland, is going to be a tough one. Ireland played England in the autumn. And Ireland pushed England, you know, pretty much in the second half in particular. But I think England have got some key players coming back from the Sevens programme, which are going to make a big difference.
The likes of Emily Scarrett, Jess Breach.
Natasha Hunt, yeah, Jess Breach. So I think that's going to make them a stronger side. And France have been on a bit of a roll at the moment, full of confidence. Playing in England might be a little bit different. So I do sort of think it's going to be an England-France thing, but that's me saying at the start, you know, it's like the first game, anything can happen.
Is that the kind of statement that would make your tooth fall out with anger, or
no,
is that a fair comment?
Yeah, no, it is. I agree with Maggie. Particularly France, the way they played, winning the Six Nations last year, but also the way they played against New Zealand in November internationals. And then, like Maggie said, the girls coming back in, strengthening that team. And I suppose it's key to note, while England were giving some of the younger players opportunities in November, Katie McLean probably to start the game against Ireland. I just think they'll be too strong, Ireland, to have injuries, and they're blooding new players as well. So I really just think it's two horse races, really.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of put, if I was putting money, it would be on England. You've got the Sevens, a lot of their world-class players and players that have been nominated, they're gone with Sevens for a while, so it's very much a focus on qualifying for the Olympics this year. And England, they seem to have kind of cemented 15s and Sevens at the moment. That could change. So it's looking like France, when they do play England, it might be their first time that this kind of team comes together, whether I think England will be off the back of, you know, playing together with Ireland and stuff too. So that definitely plays a part. So, yeah, I think it's still between those two. And Ireland are just, in terms of caps, like even looking at the Irish bench, apart from Ali Miller, who it's great to see her back after a very, like a horrific injury. There's, I think, most caps from, I think it's like 30 max from all the caps put together, even probably less, which is, that's going to be tough going into a Six Nations with that lack of experience.
Okay. Should we welcome back Murray? Ladies and gentlemen, Murray, round of applause for our bartender. Oh, you got me out. Oh, Jesus.
I can tell you
now this final show is going to be an absolute shambles. Off to you, Jenny. You grab yours.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Murray. Beautiful walk-off part as well. Thank you, Murray, ladies and gentlemen.
Feeling good applause.
So just in terms of England, obviously professional contracts was it November it was announced?
3rd of January.
3rd of January, it was like recent. How big an impact and how long will it take to really have an impact?
So I think it will take a few months to really settle into it. Look, what's great for the players, they're transitioning over to the 15s game, but to be able to really utilise being a full-time athlete, so having the rest, having the level of training that's required to be at that top level, I think it really, you won't notice the effects until after the Six Nations. I think during the Six Nations, the only benefit it will be is that they'll get that rest time, which most other teams will be going back to work and filling their days with, obviously, you know, doing jobs. But I do think for England, you'll notice it post the Six Nations, really.
Can I just ask on the way that obviously in the men's game it's completely different because they're with their clubs up until the end of, and then they're, well, normally a summer tour, November internationals. What way is going to work for England? They're like, are they back to their clubs in between? Or because there's so many rumours around that they're training one day a week together and then they're back to their clubs? Or
yeah, I don't really know the ins and outs because it hasn't really been openly confirmed. And the likelihood is they'll probably stay together in camp and just keep being pushed in that environment because it allowed the coaches and the medical staff to manage them. But I think it's very much going to be about keeping them together and really developing that bond, really.
And that's a huge thing as well because we're like, you get to look at it and be like, okay, you don't have to get up at 5 a.m. to be in the gym for 6 and then finish at 7:30, get ready, be like in work for 9 o'clock. Maybe if you're lucky, get a nap during work, finish at 5:00, 6:00.
Where do you work, Jen, like, that you're getting in the middle of work?
Photocopying office.
Ada Sheehan has a chair in work that she's like, oh, I'm just going to do some photocopying, naps for 20 minutes, and then powers through the rest of the day. And like, so that it's not only like the amount of rest that you get as well, or the the stress that you don't have to worry about financially, but you can have a bit of crack, and it's more a bonding thing as well, rather than like you see people in the morning, and for me, like, I'm not a morning person, so people will get like a nod and maybe like, this playlist is shit, change it, while you're in the gym, and then like that'll be kind of me until like I'm alive at 10. Wow. So it's like, it's kind of, I think not only will it be like physically and the amount of rest that they'll get to, but you do get closer as a team, and I think that's so valuable when you're going into these big competitions as well, having that kind of knowing each other that bit more.
I'm going to throw you the hot potato, if you'll forgive me. Where is Irish women's rugby right now?
Rebuilding again. Look, I suppose our
how frustrating is it that you use the word again?
Yeah, I suppose our success in 2013, 2014 kind of came, and people didn't really expect it to come because not a lot had been done in women's rugby. There hadn't been much development, and it was very much our team were successful, but everything underneath, there was no depth or strength in it, and I think it's still in that place. Obviously, the strategic plan came out, and it's quite ambitious. You know, it's great to see loads of activation in schools and stuff and getting girls younger involved, but I think we're some way off where England are. Like, you look at their premiership at the moment, and the quality of that is then just feeding into the national team, where we have a huge gap between, first of all, numbers playing, but then the standard of our club game up to international, the gap is huge.
Okay. I mean, would you share those frustrations?
But I'm optimistic in the future.
But do you feel progress? You say we're rebuilding again. Do you feel this time you're on the right track and you're heading in the right direction?
If things that are in the strategic plan are implemented, it looks really positive. So it's now the implementation of it, and it started in schools, but whether that holds true or not. You know, the targets and the KPIs are really ambitious, and if we hit them, brilliant. Do you know what I mean? I think we'll be in a good place then. Okay. We'll still be behind England and France, but we'll be on the right track.
Okay. I'm sensing you're treading on eggshells, but perhaps I'm misreading. I don't know. I mean, would you agree with a lot of what Fiona's saying?
Yeah. I'd say, looking at it, we were kind of chucking numbers. I'd say we're about 8 years behind England. And then...
And as England, a player, how frustrating is it, therefore, when you enter the Six Nations and England are announcing professional contracts and players returning from sevens, and you are up at 5 a.m. to train and trying to find someone to have a kip in the middle of the day?
Like I know it is what it is. You have to make do with what you have and put faith in the people that are building the structures around you, that they're doing the right thing, because... like, you're just wasting energy getting frustrated when, you know, it's like you're hopeful, because if not, it's a dark place, I think. And in this country, we've got such potential. Like, we tasted like success in 2013, and in the best possible way, Irish people just bandwagoned it, and it was class. So instead of having like, mom, dad, please come to an international game, and my friends, it was people that were like, oh, actually couldn't get tickets to the men's game, or they were cheaper, or I just want to watch more rugby. And then they came to one game, enjoyed it, they'll come to a second game, and it kind of built up organically as well. So you're kind of hoping that those numbers will stay with us while we are going through that kind of rocky terrain at the moment, because there is so much potential for us to be successful, but people with the power need to like put their money where their mouth is.
Okay. Yes. Is it fair to say that France are leading the way? I mean, what was the Grand Slam game like? Was it 17,500 at the France England game last year?
I think it was the most well attended women's game in the whole of.
It's Grenoble, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really well attended. I think it was like 1.7 million people watched it on TV as
That's
well.
That's right.
So it was definitely...
But why have the French got it so right?
I think, I don't know, in France, regardless of whether it's a man, woman, boy, girl, I think they all come out and watch it. They absolutely love it. And at the moment, I think the French men's team aren't doing too well, having lost to Fiji in the autumn. So almost all the hope is with the women's side, which is pretty good. And with the women beating New Zealand in autumn as well, it's kind of given much more interest to the women's game. But, they're doing really well. And I think also their club structure's pretty good. They've gone from top 8 to top 16 now, so there's more teams, and they're trying to develop that grassroots style of rugby now, so they've got more players going through. But they haven't gone full-time. They're part-time athletes. And I think, actually, that potentially works for them because they've got a balance and they're able to, I guess, stay fresh whenever they come to international rugby.
Yeah. I remember covering the 2010 World Cup with you at the Stoop, which was nine years ago. But I remember that almost felt like... It felt like the start of the explosion, if I can put it that way, and the growth in the game. I mean, when you look now at how far women's rugby has come in that 9 years, I know there are frustrations, obviously, with the current setup in Ireland, but could you have envisaged 2010 to where we are now and the rate of growth?
No, and I think on every front, like the standard of the games that you're seeing at the top level, the media exposure, the sponsorship and everything involved around the game has just skyrocketed. Like, it's the Women's World Cup in Ireland. I know Ireland's performance weren't good, but it was an unbelievable tournament, and you know, New Zealand have a job now to do it even better the next time. But when you look at France and the crowds, even back, when was that? 2012, when we had our little trip to the south of France, planes, trains, automobiles and all that malarkey. But the crowd there even then was unbelievable, and they come out and it's brilliant. They do crazy things like bring the ball in on a helicopter, a complete waste of money, but like they do
looks good
crazy
looks
things.
Good on telly.
Yeah, it looks deadly, and then you're waiting for the helicopter to go so you can start the match. So they celebrate it, they make a festival around it, as opposed to just, oh, there's a game, like which we've done out in Ashburn, which was brilliant home for us, but there's a game, good luck. They make it a festival, and I think more countries are starting to adopt that. I think we did a really good job at the Women's Rugby World Cup. I think we really made a festival of it. And I think England moving their games to Doncaster and Exeter, I think those places are going to make it a festival of it. But it's come on leaps and bounds. And the World Cup final 2017 was an unbelievable game of rugby to watch. The standard was unbelievable. And similarly, France, New Zealand in November was quality rugby.
Brilliant game.
Yeah.
Looking at this year's Six Nations, what kind of an atmosphere do you think there'll be in Doncaster, England, France? I think it's February the 10th, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it'll be a good crowd, actually. I think because it's a big game, obviously, with France and England, I do think the Northern lot will come out to support. The England women played, I think, one of their games in the autumn there as well, so they had a good crowd. So I imagine it'll be well attended. Again, it's potentially for England to lose, if anything. They're sort of going into it as favourites because they've got a strong side, and France have potentially been weakened a little bit because most of their sevens players are obviously out in New Zealand and Australia at the moment. So I think it'll be good. It is great moving things around because you've got to. I mean, otherwise, everyone thinks the whole of English rugby is in Twickenham. So it's nice that they're moving around to Doncaster and Exeter, and I think they'll get a good crowd.
We know how much the Irish love to beat England in the men's game. Is it burn brighter, the same, in the women's game as well? Give us a little sense of what this weekend...
100%.
Oh, good.
It's
good.
Only happened twice, but we took great.
Listen, we celebrated well.
Good.
Yeah, it was good. No, like, it is the kind of old, like, the old enemy and whatever, and... There is that kind of extra hype and build up, and like those big battles, you want to play against the best teams, and England and France are some of the best teams that you will face. And it's about how good am I, and you can judge yourself and where the team is. And it's you know before the whistle that this is going to be really tough. It's you don't need any motivation or people coming in presenting the jerseys or whatever. You're kind of like game day and can't wait to go. Like, it's definitely like one of the big things I miss from being injured for quite a bit is that kind of jitter, and it's kind of even more so when you know you're coming up against England. Like, and even watching the men's game, I'll still get it. It's like, it is excitement, but then different level when you get to be the lucky person that gets to wear the jersey that's going to face them.
So was it always us then? Was it always our team that you wanted to take down? Did you have the same anger and hunger against France and Wales?
I think we always raised our game against England, bar the 2014 semi-final of the World Cup. We won't talk about that. But we always raised our game. Like, you were always further ahead of us. I hated playing Wales. I just hated it.
Why?
I was always just on a crap pitch in the middle of nowhere.
Spygate as well.
Yeah.
Oh, go on.
No, it wasn't so much Spygate with Wales. We always thought that they went to put us in the smallest change rooms and on a crappy pitch to warm up. And then in 2013, we were going in. We played appalling in the first half. And we were going into the change room. And Joy Neville was leading the way. And she tried to open the door and it wouldn't open. And Goose came saying, open the door, open the door. Where's the key? Where's the key? Couldn't find the key. So he kung fu kicked the door in. We got in. He killed us. We won the game anyway. Afterwards, we find out, oh no, the door wasn't locked. Joy Neville just turned the handle the wrong way.
But it was unbelievable, because while, like, the Steven Seagal boom was coming, he was just kind of like, oh, this, and then just, and we were just like, yeah, we really need to fuck it up again. Like, it was like, yeah.
It worked.
Yeah, it really did. That was, yeah, turning point stuff.
So how?
And then after that game, that was when she knocked her teeth out again and had
again.
To give, yeah, Harris should give her captain speech toothless like this, and she's like, I'm really sorry, but I just whatever, and it was the quickest captain speech ever. She's just like, this is ridiculous.
It's a common problem, obviously. Was this again in the heat of battle, or was this a little more celebratory?
No, never celebrated. Like, what do you get up to in your celebrations? It was actually in the units before the game, so yeah, we did a line out, someone knocked it out. I was like, just find my tooth.
Jesus. So. How will Ireland feed their belief this weekend, given what we're talking about in this, the various set of circumstances and the haves and the have-nots? How will Ireland generate the confidence to start with a win?
Women's or men's or...
Sorry?
Women's team or men's
the women's team, yeah.
Women's team. I think you kind of... It's hard. There's so many... There's a lot of new caps and new faces. And I think with that, you don't know what you're going into. And that can be a positive thing as well. Like, I remember 2012, completely clueless.
Jenny,
I was just kind of like, yeah, like, I've grasped the offside rule and it's worked out for me. But like, I was just kind of like, I'm happy to be here and they don't know that I'm crap. Like, it was just kind of like, oh my God, just lie low and everything will work out. And then you kind of, you build into it, and it's just, everything is just sheer enjoyment. Because you're a new cap, there's no, well, I felt that there wasn't this huge amount of pressure, and you could just kind of go out and try new things, and like if you, even if you balled it up a bit, yeah, it's kind of like, oh, she's like, she's fine, like she's learning her craft or whatever. So I think there's that balance, and as well as that, you've got girls that have been in the trenches before and they know what to do. So I think it will kind of mix quite well. I think just constantly going out and focusing on themselves rather than like, Scarrett's back and the back line is going to be firing and this is going to be tough and our front row are maybe a little bit inexperienced. It's just kind of like, first game, it's against England, it's at home, why not? Like, 15v15. I know it's such a cliche thing to say, but at the end of the day, like, why not give it a crack?
Give it a proper crack. England beware.
England will be full of confidence after what has been a pretty good autumn series. Again, they've got some players coming in from the Sevens programme, so I think they will be probably a little bit scratchy to start off with, not at their very best, but I do think with the they'll grow into the game. And they've got some really key individuals, Katie Daly-McLean at 10, who's pretty much a sensational leader.
Yeah.
So I think they'll be quite strong. But I do think it's the best time for Ireland to take England, just because they will have new combinations, and actually for Ireland you'll be pretty settled. So I think if Ireland are going to go for it, this is the game to do it.
It's Donnybrook, isn't it?
Yeah. Donnybrook. It's become a good home for them.
It has.
They've had good performances there. There's been so much change, and they've a couple of injuries as well. I think they just really, as Jen said, focus on themselves and the performance. Like, I think if Ireland get a good performance against England, I think that's where they're at. I think that's as good as a win. I know that sounds really bad, but I would be happy at this stage if they got a good performance against England, sets them up for the away games, and they should be looking to target those three away games to win.
Okay, I hope a number of you here tonight will head along to Donnybrook to watch that one. And let's finish with a quick prediction. Player of the tournament, one to watch out for, and then the tournament winner, ooh, first of all. Player of the tournament or one to keep an eye on. A lot of new faces in the Ireland squad, actually, aren't there?
I think if you're looking at like new faces in the Ireland squad, Catherine Dane, Ulster player, she's on the bench against England, scrum half, really intelligent player and very calm. Even when like Ulster, sometimes their pack hasn't been the strongest, and when it's going backwards, she's still very much consistent. And when the forwards are going backwards, and you can still, the scrum half stands out, like, you're doing something right. So I think that she'll be definitely one to watch. And to be honest, I'm surprised she hasn't been capped sooner.
Yeah.
And then for experience, like, Claire Malloy.
You're always going to pick Claire Malloy.
Yeah, she's one of the best open side flankers in the world. Like, she will fit on any team. Yeah. So I think that for Ireland, they're the two, to watch. Yeah.
Bolter and one to watch for England.
I'm going to keep my hand because my mic has broken. The one to watch out for England is a lady called Hannah Bottomham. Yeah. Talented athlete. She's a prop. Just really good at what she does.
She's only 19,
and pretty much has a pedigree of England internationals through her running through her family. So she'll be one to watch. An experienced player to really keep an eye on. Again, Katie Daly McLean, real expert. And then what was the other one you asked me? What was the
winner? Who'll tournament winner be?
My tournament winner will be England. I'm going to say England.
Just.
Got more games at home, so I think that'll potentially pull in their favour.
Okay, let's see how well we've done here tonight. From an English perspective, the tournament winner will be.
I think at the moment France are on form, but the French, they just mightn't turn up. Like, which is so them. So, this is really tough. I said France last year and they won it, so I'm going to go England.
Very good. Yeah. France here.
England.
Oh wow. Okay, we are all friends here. What a very nice positive note on which to end. Thank you very much, Dean. Cheers to that.
Thanks.
Ladies and gents, a huge round of applause to Fiona, to Maggie, and to Jen as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And enjoy the tournament.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.co.uk for the facts.